Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 25 of season 5. This one is called The Inner Light. Directed by Peter Lauritsen, teleplay goes to Morgan Gendel and Peter Allen Fields. Story credit goes to Morgan Gendel. It aired back on June 1, 1992. In this story, Captain Picard is struck with an energy beam from an alien probe. While minutes pass for the rest of the crew, Picard experiences 40 years as Kamen, a humanoid scientist whose planet is threatened by the nova of its sun. It's one of those episodes. It's The Inner Light. It's a classic. Everyone loves it. Always one of those top 10 episodes. But what do we think about it? Clay is here to join me, and we are going to discuss and go deep on The Inner Light.
You've been dreaming about that starship of yours again, haven't you?
And just charting the progress of the course of the sun. I give a clue to the cause of this drought.
I think you're still trying to figure out where you are. Where that ship of yours is. How to get back to that life.
The memory is 5 years old now. But it's still inside me.
Was your life there so much better than this? So much more gratifying. So much more fulfilling that you cling to it with such stubbornness.
Ellie.
Must have been extraordinary. But never in all the stories you've told me have you mentioned anyone who loved you as I do.
Well, Clay, it's one of those episodes. It's a highly regarded fan favorite that we're going to have to tear to shreds, I think, on this podcast. So,
well, if you'd like to, I'd love to invite you and Amy over for dinner, and then you can sit and listen to me practice the flute, because that's what people do. What kind of an asshole invites you over to his house and then practices the flute in your face for like an hour?
Yeah, and he's immune to like your sort of like, hey, I didn't come over here to see you moping around. He doesn't even respond to that. He's just like, I'm playing my music, and I find this very soothing to do.
The best part about it is the guy who's sitting there listening goes, I can tell it's working because you're getting better, which means that he wasn't good to begin with. So he's like, come to my house and listen to me hack my way through like the violin for a couple hours while you sit there politely.
Yeah, there's I'm going to have a very hard time sort of coming up with criticisms of this episode. I think that I think that the one sort of odd thing is, and it ties into the fact that it's probably not an episode I can watch a lot, and I don't watch it a lot because I'm always sort of surprised by it when I watch it. The alien race is boring, but I don't think it really matters, if that makes sense. But they don't really have a lot going for them.
They get sweet crockery, though.
Yeah, they have crockery, and they like that, to they keep a tree growing or whatever.
Yeah, that pot with those weird horns coming out of it. I don't know if that's a real thing or if they made that for the show, but it looks incredibly impractical.
Right. Well, they are impractical, if anything else. Yeah. Inner Light. It's a fan favorite. It's one of my favorites, I think. It's one of the top shows that I've seen. My wife Amy thought it was her second favorite one of the shows that have come out so far. It's interesting. It's I guess I'll pass this one off to you just by saying this is possibly the saddest Star Trek episode, and I don't know if what happens to Picard in this episode is more traumatic than what the Borg did to him back in season 3.
Yeah, he seems to get his sense of self fucked with more than anybody else on this ship, which I mean goes to show you how strong of a character he is, I guess. But man, give the guy a break.
He's superhuman at this point. Yeah, like he's been his mind has been broken, and he just bounces back the next week and is ready to go to Rigel 3 or whatever.
I don't know how at the end of that episode when he shows up back in the Enterprise, he just didn't like burst into hysterical tears.
Yeah, he holds it together pretty well. He played that very well, too, when
realizing just the how much time has passed or whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a funny episode, just that it it does something that we always kind of criticize. We're like, well, it's only a 45-minute episode. They pack a lot. They make the time make sense in 45 minutes, mm-hmm. and it comes across really well. It's also just, as I was saying earlier, it's tremendously sad. It's like the saddest, because this happens to Picard and he sort of loses these 30 years or whatever. The Kamen life also gives him everything that he can't have in his current life.
Yep.
And then it takes it all away at the end and makes him restart. So what'd you think of the, I don't know, would you sort of think of this episode in general? I guess we'll start there.
Well, I think this one and the next one are going to be interesting to talk about in terms of the way I approach them, because this one I kind of rolled my eyes at when it started, specifically because I feel like I think it's a holdover from when I used to watch Star Trek as a kid, but I have this subconscious reaction anytime a crew member ends up in some sort of ridiculous cultured garb and is living in some sort of stucco house, that I just sort of like shut my brain off, because I used to hate those ones because they were always the boring ones when I was
right.
a kid.
Yeah.
But so yeah, going into this one, I was a little bit kind of like, it's one of these ones. Look at his pants.
Look at his tight belt and his wavy and his pants.
giant pants. But by the end of this one, I was totally on board. This was a really good one. I like this one a lot.
Yeah.
It was really sad.
It's tremendously sad. It's like, and I mean, that's obviously the point. It's not like they're not right, trying to right. do that, but it's like, it's one of those episodes that, the more you think about it, the more impressive it, cause you know, as you're watching it, you're kind of like, oh yeah. Like 30 years is passing or whatever, 40 years is passing. And then when it's over and you start thinking about it, it's like, it would just be crazy to have a 30-year period where everything you knew is just gone. You sort of start over, and then you just get kicked back to it right at the end. And it's like,
do you watch Rick and Morty?
Yes. Yep.
This basically was an episode of Picard playing Roy.
Right. Yeah.
which is one of my favorite things in Rick and Morty. So I'm glad that I got to see it on Star Trek.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I can't disagree with that. It's an amazing sort of idea, I guess. It's a strong idea episode that, like, you can immediately see that just the pitch alone is good, even if the episode itself is not particularly great shakes. It just kind of hits all the beats that it needs to. It bounces through all of his, you know, cuts through the years. What'd you think of cutting back to the Enterprise?
I thought the cuts back to the Enterprise were great, because I think, excuse me, I think that one of the things that gets a little bit dicey when you go into a story like this is making the time jumps feel natural, and I think using the act breaks and the cuts back to the Enterprise were really good cover for throwing in time jumps, because it was never like... it's different in the series finale, because that episode is basically flawless as far as I'm concerned. But in that episode, they do the kind of thing where, you know, they'll be talking to Picard, young Picard, and then he'll turn to answer and he'll magically be old Picard.
Right. Characters are also he's aware of the jump.
Right. This one, when you have all of the time changes happen off screen, it doesn't feel as weird or as unnatural for you understand that all of that time has been lived in what you haven't seen on screen.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
And it's a really good way to get that much stuff in into a 45-minute episode. And they also do a really good job with that stuff, you know, by adding a lot of things in, like the flute playing. You know, he progressively gets better at it, which obviously takes time, and the kids and his fucking weirdo son. Yeah. I don't know where they found that guy.
That's Patrick Stewart's actual son.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
No, yeah. I apologize, but holy shit.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Did he bring his own clothes too?
Probably. He brought his own toupee, certainly, in the opening, like the what, first scene.
His own eyebrow toupee.
They brought his own toupee for that, and then he more clearly filled out the Stewart bloodline in his later scene where his hair is thinning.
Wow.
Yeah, that's actually his son.
Okay.
No, I
congratulations.
I agree about the jumps. I do wonder. I'm sort of torn. I think that they had to do it just as the way that the show works. And as you're saying, it's like a great way to break up the time skips.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if not knowing that there is the Enterprise still existing would have made the story any more devastating or less devastating. I'd have a hard time. Like if we had only stayed with Picard the entire time and then at the very end when he wakes up, we see the crew again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that would have been better. Or worse. I mean, they do effectively demonstrate that time is passing for Picard at a much faster, like more time is spent with Picard than the crew, because the crew really only has a chance to try one thing and it doesn't work, you know?
Right.
Because they only have 20 minutes to accomplish what mm-hmm. they're trying to do. And it ultimately doesn't add up to anything because Picard just has to finish his story. But I like that. I like to jump back. I like the fact that everything tied the she's wearing the emblem, which is the probe.
Yep.
At the very end.
Yep.
I like the fact that they drop lines about they're working on something. Yeah, like towards the end, they're like, "Oh, we're working on something that'll like it might not save us, but it's what we're going to try to do."
Right. So yeah, I thought that bit was interesting because the guy's like, "What? You want to send people off this planet on a ship? We don't have anything near that technology. We just invented rockets." And then like 10 years later, it's like, oh, yeah, we just sent this telepathic mind-linking probe into the space.
Yeah, they went down a different technology tree path, yeah. I think, to figure that stuff out. I was reminded that everyone starts wearing old age makeup in this one. I was the administrator guy.
Yep.
He was doing his best Jameson from Too Short a Season impression, yeah. I felt.
Yes.
He was definitely muppeting it up under the old age makeup, and Picard was
not doing
it.
That's a really good way to describe it, yeah. All Muppet face.
Yeah,
I think they used the same upper lip prosthesis for that guy.
Yeah, it's this acting decision where you talk like an old man, them acting like an old man is just going, "Bah, you think that's going to happen to us?" It's like,
right.
I don't think that's the best way to act about that. But yeah, let's see here.
Oh, one other thing I wanted to say about the cuts back to the Enterprise is I think that actually did – those things did kind of lessen the cream-colored walls of the episode, like I was saying at the beginning. Because, like, it just breaks it up a little bit, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it reminds you you're watching Star Trek, and it's not just watching a guy grow old and have a horrible devastation happen to his family. Which
right,
is, I mean,
yeah.
You know, that's fine, I guess. But
no, it's definitely, I mean, it definitely speaks to the fact, like, as bland as the walls are, this race is not particularly fascinating. They're basically just humans, you know, like sort of 1,000 years ago, not even, but
yeah,
they're basically just human people.
And it also, you know, it obviously doesn't end up playing out this way, but it lends a little bit of a sinister vibe to the probe where, you know, since they're trying to get him disconnected from it, but it's obviously tapped into his you know internal mechanisms or whatever, there is a bit of a question over what the intent is.
Sure.
Which I think, you know, I think that definitely adds to some of the tension of what's going on, because, you know, it seems to be all sunshine and roses down on the planet. Well, I guess sunshine and no roses.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They're all burnt off.
But so, you know, it just keeps the tension there a little bit better than it just being him playing the flute for 40 minutes.
Yeah, I agree. It's also it gives Data the because I think the Enterprise crew like tells the audience that civilization was killed before mm-hmm. it's discovered on the planet. So.
Right.
It allows you to sort of realize that, oh, there's some sort of downside to what's going to happen, even though it's plainly obvious from the fact that everything seems to be going wrong on the planet outside of that. But
I got really excited for a minute that this is going to be a prequel to Dune, because when Patrick Stewart comes over, when Picard comes over and describes his technology for conserving water, I was like, oh, does he mean like a still suit? like he wears in the movie Dune that he's also stars in?
I was thinking that when Picard brings it up, and he brings it up to Bataille, Bataille would be like, I want to show you my jump to conclusions, Matt. It didn't happen.
Yep.
They just killed that poor guy off for some reason.
Because it's sad, man.
Yes. Well, although...
It's a sad episode.
It really was a sad... when the wife dies is such a sad moment. It's just like everything Picard has been wanting. And he gets paired with a woman who understands him. So I guess my philosophical question to you about this... Did the Kamen person actually exist?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Or is the probe just sort of inserting you into a role and then making up what that role would have been like on that planet?
I would have to say, if I had to hazard a guess, it would be that one. I feel like inserting him into an actual person's life isn't super necessary.
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, if you start talking about that, you have to start dissecting how the technology of this thing works and how it, you know, because, well, then does that mean that everybody that he interacted with was some sort of
fake
thing, yeah. or were they real people that, and he was just plugged into a I don't know.
I think that the Kamen person didn't exist. But everyone else did exist. And
yeah, I'd buy that.
It sort of implied that by the fact that he remains ignorant to the information that everyone else in the village seems to know about.
Yeah.
In terms of the launching of the probe and things like that, where mm-hmm. if the Kamen person actually existed, I feel he would have been aware of what was going on.
Well, I guess they didn't have to do this, but I feel like the normal way they would insinuate that Kamen actually existed would be if, like, he was the one who launched the probe. You know, like, if let's say that the person who, much like the guy who created Data, kind of creates it in his own image, so he puts the person it locks onto into the body of himself.
Right, yeah.
And then gets to go through the process of the last days of the planet sort of thing. But, I would err on the side of he's probably just, you know, it's probably like if he woke up on the holodeck kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. He's in an avatar, except it's not blue or whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I mean, it's really just sort of a fascinating little character study of just how simple the story is here. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking that, in the terms of the other character stories that we've kind of watched with Star Trek The Next Generation, I think that the show's kind of funny to me in that when it hits a character story, the character story has to be a certain level of bigness, and it almost doesn't matter about the character in the story. As opposed, like, when the show tries to tell you small stories about the characters, it always seems like it never really works for mm-hmm. you. But mm-hmm. But when they do these sort of big, epic and scale ideas, it always works, even if the character in the story doesn't really matter that much, if that makes any sense. Like, they're better at telling the epic personal story than they are the small personal stories.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I don't really know how to unpack that so much, but I think I understand what you're saying. Yeah,
like when they try to do a Geordi story, or there's going to be a story about Picard falling in love later on, it never
they just lean on the keys and hit save.
Right, it's just whatever comes out. And here, the other thing I would say would be like this: I consider this episode to be pretty similar to Sarek, which you might not have watched, but it's the same kind of.
I saw that one.
It's a bigger idea, I guess, packaged up into it, which makes it interesting.
Yeah, I think the reason that it works that way in Star Trek is because, you know, the concept of the show in general lends itself to larger, epic things.
Yeah,
like it's difficult to. I feel like it would be difficult to sell a Star Trek episode where it was, you know, two people in a room with nothing weird happening, and that was just sort of like the episode.
Right, yeah.
And it was just like a character study between Data and his cat. But you know, it's a great vehicle for exploiting character traits in high stakes circumstances.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Which is, I think, probably also why it feels like they whiff so hard when that doesn't work.
Yep.
But yeah, when they do it right, it's, you know, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, yeah, it's I'd agree with that. It's when they miss, it's very ugly, which makes me sort of think about with the new Star Trek series, like that kind of storytelling isn't really in style anymore. Mm-hmm. Like the mm-hmm. new Star Trek is definitely going to be, if they make it in a new television kind of way, it's definitely going to be more about the character interactions. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which I don't know. I don't know if that'll ever feel like Star Trek, sort of.
Well, you know, I mean, it doesn't have to be that way. You could still make it a Star Trek show. I mean, the tough thing is, I wish there's really not anything to compare it to right now, because I can't really think of a. I apologize if you're getting the radio of the person at the light outside of my house coming through right now.
No.
It's very loud. I can't really think of another show, unless I'm completely blanking, that has the same kind of big epic sci-fi vibe that Star Trek does, aside from like Doctor Who. But Doctor Who only really has like three characters in it at any one time,
right?
So I mean, I think it's probably still definitely a viable option. I just don't think anybody's doing it. Is the only difference,
right? Yeah, I mean, I guess it sort of. I guess my what it implies to me is that you'd definitely have to update. I guess what I'm saying is that the Star Trek storytelling method feels a little bit dated at this point, and I don't know how far you can push it to a point where it wouldn't feel like it was modern TV. Like,
well, the most interesting thing for me is going to be. So I think it's supposed to be. They said it was going to be kind of like American Horror Story or Fargo, where it's a different story every season.
Yeah, yeah.
And just
rumors, the idea anyway.
Rumors. Yeah, the idea of seeing a full season serialized Star Trek story is going to be really interesting because they've never done that before.
Right. Yes.
As far as I know, anyway.
Yeah, I'm not negative towards the new series or anything, but I think it's...
Sounds like you kind of are, Wes.
Sounds like... I was watching an episode of Enterprise, which was the last series, and it mm-hmm. just feels so dated at this
point. Oh, yeah.
Like, it looks like a modern show, but the way they tell the story is... It feels like it's from the early 90s, and it just doesn't hold up,
yeah.
So... They just have to be careful of that.
Well, I think when did that go off the air? Early 2000s?
2005, maybe, something like
2005,
that.
Okay, I think that was a really weird era for television, because that was like right before the what you'd call like the new TV really hit.
Yeah.
Like I don't think Breaking Bad was on yet.
No, that's the era of basically. I consider that era to be HBO was taking off, but the networks were still strong. So the networks
right.
were still putting out a lot of stuff that people were watching, but HBO and the premier networks were at that point. Like Sopranos had been out for a little while, The Wire was out, things like that.
Right.
So it's that kind of era.
Yeah, but the stuff that they were putting out was still like kind of treading water. Kind of all around, if I remember correctly. I can't really think of anything from that era where I would point to and be like, that was a really good non-HBO show.
Right, that was a really good CW show that I just
watched. Yeah, I mean, like, even that was like, what, Smallville?
Seventh Heaven? Yeah,
Seventh Heaven? I don't know. Yeah, I can't, maybe, you basically had your Law and Orders and,
yeah,
The Shield. Was The Shield even on at that point? I don't even remember.
It might have been the start of reality TV on the networks.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So
at least that's what was dominant anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's just that, yeah, that would be the, that's the just sort of world that the new Star Trek has to step into. And I think oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and also that's pre modern nerd culture boom too.
Yes.
You know, that stuff hadn't really blown up the way it has in the last 5 years or 6 years.
Yep. Yep.
So I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And just, I mean, to tie into the episode, I almost feel like this kind of episode would be one of the better ones that you could almost remake. I'm not saying that they should remake it, but I feel like this story could fit into a modern kind of story, where some of the other ones maybe wouldn't seem to work out as well. But like iBorg, which we just watched last week, would probably have a harder time being updated.
Well, what's interesting to me, it actually brings up an interesting difference between current TV style and the style that they were doing when they were making TNG, is if you were to do an episode like this now, this episode would probably be crapped on a lot. Because this episode would be referred to as a filler episode. Whereas back then, it was like, oh no, this is just a really good standalone episode. The way people take in television now, if you have a if you have an episode that's outside of the longer narrative, people completely dismiss it. And it becomes a quote-unquote filler episode, no matter how good it may be in terms of, like, character. Well, I saw that shit all the time on Breaking Bad. Like, you know, there was always, like, the one bottle episode they would do every season. And without a doubt, I would read reviews on the episode, and everyone would be like, oh, this episode sucked. It was filler. It was just the two of them stuck in a van for an hour.
It's right.
Like, well, no. Well, those are the episodes where you get really deep into character motivations, and you could just kind of have these two guys hash out different shit. It's not necessary, just because it's not furthering the plot of everything, this doesn't mean it's a throwaway episode.
Right. Yep.
So it'll be interesting, you know, to see how they handle it. Cause I think if you were to do this episode now, you'd have to tie it into something larger or stretch it out over two episodes. I don't know what the answer is.
Right.
It seems more difficult to do now.
Or his entire thing would be a season. You know, his entire adventure.
God. Okay. As much as I like this episode, I don't know if we need to do that.
We'd never check back in with the Enterprise. He would just be on the planet. We'd learn every single major scale on that flute that he eventually gets down.
Oh, another reason. Why I think that cutting back to the Enterprise was good. Not that it would be this necessarily, because you know how you get there at the beginning, because he gets blasted by the probe, but it really does cut down on the it was all a dream angle kind of thing.
It does, yes, yes. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, if you just stuck with the planet stuff and then ripped him back at the end, it would be like, that's kind of cheating.
Yeah, I think you wouldn't engage with the drama of it, because you'd be like, this is all fake. This is fake. This is a dream. Like, none of this really matters, which it ultimately kind of is. But the episode also plays on, like, the sort of nature of memory. You know, like, this essentially really happened for Picard.
Right, right.
Like, this isn't – he can't even separate it into being like, oh, I was just in a holodeck. Like, the memory of it to him is – completely real. It's like the devastating last scene shows where he clutches the flute and like stares out the window.
Right.
So it's just, I really love that last scene too. I love the way it's written. I love the way Riker doesn't say anything when Picard opens the box and he just walks out.
Yeah.
I
think at first when they got to the end, when he woke up, I was kind of thinking, man, I wish he would do something like, you know, open up the captain's log and start telling the story of the people into the log or something like that. But because you know, the whole point was to remember and spread the word about the civilization that died.
Yeah.
But the thing with the flute, I mean, it's just too good not to do it.
Yep. Yep.
It's sort of the inverse in effectiveness of is it the end of the Spock episode where he does the live. No, there's one of them where he does like the some sort of hand gesture.
The one
with the at Tanagra, that one.
Oh yeah, with Darmok. Yeah.
Where he does like the hand thing out the window, and it's like, that doesn't really work. This one works really well.
Yes, I think because the Darmok one, he's just sort of paying homage to that guy, where this one is more internalized.
Yeah.
Like, you actually feel the reason why he would be sort of devastated by this.
And also the fact that he knows how to play the flute.
Right, yes. Yeah, so.
It shows that shit was not, it actually did happen to him.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, the one thing I changed there, I'm glad they sort of went halfway. They play the music over the shot of the ship through space.
Mm-hmm.
But they play the traditional Star Trek music over the credits, which I wish it was just the flute music over the credits.
Yeah.
That would have been.
Yeah.
It's just the music is too abrasive of the theme song coming back in. It's like too it's too happy. to immediately come after all that, what had gone on.
Right, right.
Yeah.
What was it? God, all these shows that I watch, I can't remember who used to do this. There was some was it 24 that used to, anytime a character died, they wouldn't do the beep, beep, beep over the changing of the numbers at
oh,
the end
really?
Of the episode. Yeah, it was surprisingly effective.
Yeah. Yeah, you get so used to that stuff when it's not there. It means something.
Yeah.
Huh. No, I watched the first season of 24, and I obviously didn't build in enough of it to me. Yeah, the inner light. This is the second Star Trek episode to win a Hugo Award, which which I guess is big in sci-fi circles.
Yes.
Can you guess what the first Star Trek episode to do that was? It was not Next Generation.
Oh, I was going to say Angel One. I assume it was City on the Edge of Forever.
It was. Yeah, that was the first one to do it. Yeah,
and not surprising.
It's it's such a weird episode just in its placement. Like every season they put the bad episodes in the final like three or four leading up to the season finale.
Right.
They always feel like they're the ones that were just like, fuck it, we need ideas, like throw together anything and see what sticks.
Yeah.
And this one does not feel that way. It really all came together.
Right.
It was well directed, well acted. Picard gets to, Patrick Stewart gets to act his ass off and all that stuff.
Oh, man. Creepy, creepy old man Picard was, that's creepy. That's some creepy shit.
When he's crawling after the kid. It's like out of a horror movie.
Yeah. I thought he was going to eat him or something.
I would have had a tough time with that one.
Oh, the one other thing that I wanted to say that I liked about this is the point where it really kind of got me was when Data says, oh, well, they've been extinct for 1,000 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that point that it clicked with me what was going on. And what I really liked about that was you, at that moment, realized that Picard isn't there to help them. He's not there to be tricked into he's basically there just to watch them die.
Yeah, yep.
And that's some pretty heavy shit. You know, it's like that. Usually I feel like in this situation, it's you put them into this situation to trick them into doing something or to help future knowledge to help them save. I don't know, some shit like that.
Yep.
But this one's just like, no, we're gone. We just want you to be sad that we're gone. And so
we've decided that mentally traumatizing you would be the best way out of this whole situation.
Yep.
Go back and tell everyone about us. We didn't want to write anything down or anything. Just hopefully you remember everything that happened over 30 years. And here's a flute. So good job.
Yeah. Why didn't they put was there a floppy disk that came along with that probe that, you know, had a glossary of terms in it or something?
Riker came in and spewed some nonsense about it was all deactivated and they couldn't do anything with it. So I guess it just shuts down. Yeah. That's.
But why didn't they didn't even put a hard copy of the history in there?
I can't remember the guy's name. The administrator's logbook or something. Just anything. Just toss it in.
Yeah.
There.
What happens if the person that it latches onto, when they get ripped back to the present, they have a heart attack and die?
Yep.
That was all for nothing.
What if they attach to a Klingon or something? Someone who just is not predisposed
that would be
awesome. To going in and doing this.
I wish that would have been great if they had done it with Worf. That would have been awesome.
Worf would have just passed out behind the thing and no one would have noticed for 25 minutes and the adjustment would have been
also,
fun.
Also, I think Worf a little underwritten in this episode because I think the only thing he says is, Commander, I think we should blow it up.
He also, he calls, when they're talking in the oh, am I confused? I'm confused. I'm sorry. I'm confusing with the next episode, which we'll talk about after this. But yeah, he really just, he immediately suggests blowing it up and Riker goes all in for that.
So basically, point is, kids, make sure you keep a hard copy of all your important documents.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I think we're done with this one. I before we go into final thoughts, I think it's a tremendous Star Trek episode, and it has almost nothing that you would expect out of a great Star Trek episode in terms of what the actual plot is all about. Yeah, cool. Well, let's go to final thoughts, and we will give our thoughts and opinions after I play a clip from The Inner Light.
Please, Captain, don't get up too quickly.
Captain. This is the Enterprise.
45 minutes.
All right, so we're here with our final thoughts for The Inner Light. We're going to rate it on our scale of 1 to 5. Just I wanted to mention before we go into that, I've been informed, I knew about this, but I'm such an idiot that I didn't start doing it until recently, that YouTube allows polling to go onto the video. So if you guys are watching this video, you'll see, if you're on YouTube or on a mobile app, you can see in the upper right-hand corner of the screen, there's a little gray circle with an eye in it. If you click that right now, you'll be able to do like a poll about what you would rate this episode. So if you enjoy the content and you want to do that, it's been interesting to see what people have been rating some of the previous ones. I'm going to start going back and fixing it to all the videos, but there's like 120 of them at this point. It takes a long time, so I'll do a couple.
Do you have a job? Do you like go to work? When do you have the time to do this?
It all fades together. Sometimes slow day at work, I'll just go through all these videos and put a poll up on them or something. But anyway, if you guys vote, it's neat. I'll put a question in there too to see if things get interesting. People were on the iBorg episode. People were surprisingly in favor of genocide of the Borg, which I found to be funny. Mm. So anyway, click the poll, give us a rating on 1 to 5. So Clay, what are you going to give The Inner Light?
Ooh, I was originally going to go 4. Yeah, I think I'll stick with a high 4. I don't know if I'm going to go full 5 on it.
Sure.
No, I am going to go 5 because I do have a personal connection to this episode because a couple months ago, a good friend of mine who's actually a fan of the show got married and he asked me to speak at his wedding. And I actually used one of Picard's quotes from this episode in the wedding speech.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, that pushes it to a 5 for me.
Yeah, it's you.
Also, it did. I never noticed this before of all the episodes that I've watched, but there's a great moment where Riker goes over to talk to Geordi, who's up at the control panel typing away.
Yep.
And Riker just leans full palm across like 14 buttons.
Yep.
And I don't know how that ship works, but I don't think it's like that.
It can tell your intentions. If you just half-assedly lay on the panel, it doesn't work.
If I sit on my remote wrong, it turns the closed captions on my TV. I don't know what would happen if you leaned on a panel like that on a starship.
There's a good YouTube video about that. There's a thing where in the first season, I think Riker just comes in and like sits on the panel. And so it goes into clips of the ship blowing up and things.
Every movement he makes in the show is like he's just caught himself from falling over.
Yeah, he's very Frankenstein-y in the way he sort of lumbers around and like leans on
it's
things.
It's so weird. Anyway, 5.
5. I'm going to give it a 5 as well. I think it's one of the best episodes of the 5th season. It's probably one of the best episodes of the show when all things are said and done. I think there's very few of the Star Trek episodes that really just sort of like emotionally connect like full on for me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sarek is one of them. I think this is one of them. And I think that they're really the special episodes and that I couldn't stand it if every single episode was trying to do something like that. But when it comes along once in a while, it's just like, oh, that was very satisfying. And the concept of this one is this episode is like terrifying and sad and also happy at the same mm-hmm. time. It's got all these weird things going together and it works out really well.
Yeah, I still am amazed at the turnaround I had on this one, because even at the beginning when the thing shows up and they're, you know, techno babbling back and forth, I was like, oh boy, here we go.
Right.
And you know, when he wakes up and he's in this thing, I was like, oh geez, this is gonna be one of those boring ones. And then by the end, I was like, that was the most heartbreaking thing I've ever seen.
No, it's good. He's came in from Catan with Eileen, I think is his wife's name. But yeah, this is something of a special episode. So guys, give it a rating. Hit that poll button. If you enjoyed the content, hit that like button as well. If you're on iTunes, rating and review helps get the show out there. Thanks for all your comments. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for commenting. Thank you for all your thoughts and everything like that. Clay, thank you for coming on.
No problem. Anytime.
We'll be back in a couple days with the season finale, Time's Arrow, Part 1. See ya.